Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
It is clear at this moment that a traditional conservative who believes in limited government and free markets, who is devoted to free trade, who is pro-immigration, has a narrower and narrower path to nomination in the Republican Party, the party that has so long defined itself by its belief in those things.
Our challenge today is to heal the rent in our country's fabric, to come together as a people and as a nation, to set aside our minor differences and unite around our love of country and its fundamental freedoms guaranteed by our great Constitution.
I think you all know the regard that I hold Senator John McCain in and his legacy as an Arizona treasurer, an American icon, and a hero to our country. I was happy that Martha and Cindy were able to get together and visit and clear the air.
It was actually a very painful decision because nobody wants to leave the children and nobody wants to close the school, but the action wasn't happening and we heard one promise and then no concrete follow-up. So it wasn't just about teacher salaries, it was also about how we were going to continue to fund the schools.
I've said stupid things, I've done stupid things. I stood on the carpet, I took it like a man, I apologized. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
Mr. Shooter, how do you vote?
I vote no.
Shoot votes no.
And with us now to talk about some of the biggest political stories in Arizona this year and how they could affect 2019 are John Gabriel, editor of Ricochet.com, and Chip Scutari of Scutari and Sizlak. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So, Chip, let me get you out of the blocks first. When it comes to, there's a lot to talk about with Senator McCain passing away. Let's start off with the Sinema McSally race. What did we learn from that as far as where Arizona politics are right now?
I think we learned that Senator-elect Sinema is a perfect candidate for Arizona. I say perfect in the means of her centrist views. You know, a lot of hardcore conservative wanted, you know, to paint her as this dyed-in-the-wool liberal, which she may be in her heart of hearts. I remember covering her earlier on in her career when she was at. But she ran a very well-organized campaign, similar to Governor Ducey. She was well-financed. She had her TV ads up in March or April portraying this, you know, the beautiful Arizona sunset, portraying herself as an independent voice. And I think her campaign showed this was not just the year of the woman, but the year of the female suburban voter. And she rode that, and she stayed on message. I'll never forget that PBS debate, which I believe was watched by 80,000 households, which, Steve, as you know, is a PBS star yourself, that's a big chunk of the audience of Arizona. And she just stayed on message. A lot of people criticize her for being robotic. I saw it from a political consulting as she's talking to those undecided voters. And McSally went off at the end about, you know, why haven't we covered military issues or whatever she said. So I think Sinema, it's going to be tough to replicate when people say, boy, just do what Sinema does. Well, she's, you know, super smart, attractive, hardworking, had established herself in Congress. That's not going to be easy to duplicate for anyone in Arizona.
Yeah, John, jump on that. But also as far as 2019 goes, I mean, it's going to be her first term in the Senate. We'll have McSally serving this short term. What do you see as far as what they can accomplish right away? Should we look for major things from them?
I think Sinema is going to be working on bridge building. That's been a real strength of hers. You know, her best buddy in D.C. was always her and Jeff Flake hanging out. And she is just an incredibly shrewd politician and just came across as engaging. I think Arizona Republicans need to figure out this isn't the day of, you know, 15 years ago, Joe Arpaio, pink underwear. It's the age of the pink tutu, I guess I should say. But yeah, she ran an incredibly smart, disciplined campaign. The dynamics between her and McSally should be interesting to watch because McSally was breathing so much fire during the actual campaign, and she's hopefully learned that that does not work here. It doesn't work in that environment.
I'm curious about their sort of working relationship in the Senate, because by all accounts, they were at least cordial when they were both in the House serving in the delegation there. Of course, the campaign, as you said, was not the most pleasant several months for the two of them together. Do you anticipate that together, once they're in the Senate, the two of them just representing Arizona as opposed to two of nine, does that change the dynamic, do you think?
I think it definitely will. And McSally should be very chastened. What you saw when she did concede the race, the little video she made with her dog, people, Democrats to Republicans, were like, where was this candidate? You know, where was this candidate? This is appealing. That's what people would like to see, especially with just kind of the 24/7 outrage coming out of D.C. We want to see our representatives and senators doing their job, getting along, trying to get done what they can possibly get done. Nobody's going to be screaming their way into anyone's hearts.
And if you look at Congresswoman McSally versus candidate McSally, her and Sinema agreed on a lot of the issues. I believe Congresswoman McSally, before she turned into the candidate for Senate McSally, was for a pathway to citizens, you know, and a lot of other things that people would deem moderate or centrist. Mm-hmm. So McSally's biggest challenge is, how do you tell President Trump when you're on the ballot with him, hey, dude, I got this. Just stay out of my way. I mean, seriously, that's her biggest challenge. I think if she just ran as herself, she could have won, or it could have been closer, or we'll never know. But the embrace of Trump and just the nasty, toxic nature of the campaign, maybe it wasn't hers or handlers. I think she could just be herself, and I think Congresswoman Sinema will be willing to work with her on issues.
Chip, I want to follow up on something that you said about how Sinema, how she won and how she ran might be hard to duplicate. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, of course, in the next election is 2020, when McSally will be trying to defend her seat, get elected in her own right. But, you know, we all know that candidates will start thinking about it and talking about it, and maybe even filing to run in 2019. Just how much of a roadmap do you think, even if the candidate on the Democratic side can't be, obviously, Sinema or replicate who she is, how much of how she ran do you think Democrats can and should try to use in their own races against McSally?
You know, I hate to say every candidate has to do what's best for them. They have to be themselves. I think when you're genuine, it comes across, especially in this 24/7 media cycle. I think they can use her example of working across the aisle to get things done. Raising a lot of money is always helpful. But it's up to the candidate. You know, I could see, like, if a Greg Stanton would to run for U.S. Senate, he kind of fits in that Sinema, a moderate, you know, he could play moderate, but he can also keep the progressives happy, which you have to do on the Democratic side. Someone like that, you know, maybe Grant Woods is going to be a lot of skepticism because he's just been a Democrat for about 3 minutes. So it's going to be tough to, like I said, replicate what Sinema, but you could take that centrist. And if anything, her and Governor Ducey could teach candidates about message discipline. I mean, they stay on message. The other one who's really good at that is Kate Gallego, who's running for Phoenix mayor. She stays on her, as some people say, her yoga mat, you know, and just is really key on message discipline.
This is the Friday Newscap on KJZZ with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today are Chip Scutari and John Gabriel. John, let's talk about the passing of Senator John McCain. Obviously one of the biggest news stories across the country in 2018. But let me frame it this way. So we've talked a bit about Sinema and McSally, and there were points made at the memorial service and then at the funeral and whatnot as far as the service that Senator McCain had given, which very few people can match. But in terms of the political service, are we going to see actually people being influenced by that? Or is that going to fade, as you said before we went on the air, the fact that the news cycle is 45 minutes now? Are people going to try to put into effect the things that Senator McCain tried?
I think McCain was one of a kind. I think what'll be interesting, I think it's already fading with McSally being appointed to the Senate. It was quite apparent, reading between the lines, that the McCain family was not thrilled with that choice. And for John McCain to pass, he looms so large in the state, not only in the national consciousness, but also just behind the scenes. You kind of had to go there and kiss the ring before you wanted to run for office or anything like that. And now that that's gone, there's no gatekeeper, quote unquote, like that. And it's a complete changing of the guard, especially with Flake stepping down, the interim Senator Kyle stepping down. It really is kind of this major generational shift we're seeing going on. For those of us who have lived in Arizona a while, just seeing the McSally Sinema era is going to be radically different.
And Chip, Senator McCain obviously is the major driving point behind Grant Woods either deciding to run or that organic feeling that people want him to run. Not even living up to Senator McCain, because he has seniority obviously by the time he'd been in the Senate that long. Are we going to see Sinema even in her acceptance speech invoked his name again. Are we actually going to see that in practice?
I really hope so. I mean, I'm an eternal optimist. You know, as John pointed out, that politics are pretty nasty these days and pretty doggone partisan. But what you saw with Senator McCain and former Congressman Ed Pastor, who unfortunately passed away this year, were when people talked about them, and I was fortunate enough to write a column or story about Senator McCain in Phoenix Magazine, people really had deep feelings towards him, whether you liked him or not. I mean, they weren't being superficial. And same with Ed Pastor. All he did to bring money back to Arizona, whether it's light rail or air traffic control tower at Sky Harbor, Republicans really spoke about Ed Pastor with a ton of respect. And I have a lot of conservative friends who would help him out in his campaigns, who really respected him. And I'd love to see us get back to that. I think that's what Congresswoman Sinema is trying to tap into. If it's successful, we'll see. There's a lot of naysayers out there. That, I think what she's trying to tap into, that emotion.
Do you see any politicians in Arizona, either on the state or federal level, who could at some point be at that level? I mean, maybe not at the Senator McCain level with, you know, his backstory and the number of years in the Senate, but somebody who people from both parties, both sides of the political spectrum could say, yeah, I might not agree with them on everything, but, you know, I really respect them. I will help them. We've been able to work together well.
Yeah, there has to be some out there. I'm not thinking of any right now off the top of my head.
It's telling that none come to your head, right?
No, it's tough. I mean, I think Governor Ducey has shown a pragmatic side. I think he's done a phenomenal job of keeping Arizona out of, you know, Comedy Central or any of those shows, and has done a good job of portraying Arizona as a place to bring your business. So in a sense, he's tapped into that a bit. But I'm trying to think of young up-and-comers. I could see like a Corey Woods in Tempe, if he were to become mayor, maybe bringing that kind of spirit to office. Mm-hmm. But I'd have to think about it. I'm sure there's others right now who are not in politics but are aspiring to be that.
We'll call you in a couple weeks.
Sure.
John, anyone for you that comes to mind that might, not necessarily starting in 2019, but might at some point sort of grow into that kind of role that Senator McCain and Congressman Pastor had?
Yeah, they will definitely not mirror McCain just because he was such a one of a kind, but I think Sinema and Ducey as well, they have a very good chance at it. And you brought up the term pragmatic. I think at its base, Arizona is not liberal or conservative, it's pragmatic. And it's this independent streak, maybe being in the Mountain West just brings out this independent streak, and they want to see you get things done, not just yell at people in the media. And I think Sinema is primed to do some fantastic work. There's a lot of bipartisan initiatives that could happen in the Senate. You know, who knows what's happening in D.C.? Criminal justice reform was a fine example of that. I could see her heading up those kind of issues that most people on both sides agree with, or at least are not hostile to. And she could come out as a senior statesman within 2 years, because looking like a statesman in Washington is pretty easy compared to the competition right now.
You know, I'll give one name I just thought of that I knew, got to know. She lost her state Senate race. It was Christina Kelly. She's a former teacher, educator. She was a small business owner. Really upbeat, positive. I've never seen a candidate walk neighborhoods and really enjoy it. So I hope she stays in the political game, because she has a lot to offer. I see her being a rising star, hopefully, and I hope she'll run for office again.
Well, there's that term happy warrior, which applies to Sinema at this point. You know, we think about Jack Kemp. There aren't that many over the course of decades that we think of. All right, we haven't talked about Jeff Flake yet, John. So some of us who are sarcastic were thinking maybe in 2019 Jeff Flake would be hosting a show on MSNBC, but I guess that's not going to happen. So what do you see for him? Will he try to remain influential? Will he be in public policy? Will he try to be a lobbyist?
I don't see him going into lobbying per se, but some kind of a think tank role I think would be a good fit for him. Yeah, a lot of people were thinking like an MSNBC or, you know, permanent CNN guest, but I think he's just kind of done with politics, understandably. His style of reaching across the aisle, of really promoting civility, is just out of step. And it'll be interesting to see what he does, but I think some kind of a think tank role. I view him from a D.C. think tank as like an Arthur Brooks or something from AEI, someone who's trying to reach across the aisle, get things done in a pragmatic way.
So not on the human level, because by all accounts, he's a fine human being. Has he been a failure as a politician?
I believe so. I believe he has, but I think really, he's fine with that. He would rather be a good human being. You know, that's what his focus is just trying to be true to his principles, true to his ethics. I think he could have done a much better job of constituent services and just understanding the people of Arizona. John McCain was a creature of D.C., but boy, did he keep his ear to the ground in Arizona and make sure he was taking care of constituents who needed it. Anyone you talk to would have a story about McCain coming through if something was necessary. I remember my dad sent a letter for him back when I was in the Navy over some minor tiff, and I got called into an admiral's office, and I was scared out of my wits. But it just kind of shows you once again that he just really cared about his job and doing the nuts and bolts of the job, not just appearing on TV.
And it's a perfect example of when Jeff Flake got elected in 2012, which isn't that long ago. He was a darling of the right. No one thought he would be a one-term senator. So it's how quickly the world of politics can turn on you. And, you know, hopefully Senator Flake stays involved, writing books, maybe teaching a college class. I think that would be phenomenal. But the world turned. And unfortunately, if it was President Rubio or President Kasich or even President Cruz, he could still be in the Senate. But with Trump's era, that was not a good fit for Jeff Flake.
Do you think that he will continue to have the platform out of politics that he has had in the Senate if he wants to continue speaking out about the things he's been speaking out about?
Probably it'll be diminished quite a bit, but I hope he still stays involved, whether writing or a think tank or whatever. And if you know Jeff, that's really what he believes. So I respect that a lot. You know, a lot of people were upset with him. He didn't disagree with Trump on votes more than he did, but he was voting his conscience, and I have to believe that. So he said what he wanted to say, and good for him.
John, any other thoughts on Flake before we move on?
Not really, just wishing him well.
That's John Gabriel. Also here is Chip Scutari. And with Mark Brody, I'm Steve Goldstein. In the midst of the Friday newscap here on KJZZ, which continues after this. Good morning. We're in the midst of the Friday newscap here on KJZZ with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today, Chip Scutari of Scutari & Sislak, and John Gabriel, editor of Ricochet.com. So, Chip, there was this thing called Red for Ed. It involved a walkout of thousands of teachers, and it apparently had a huge impact on funding. I'm sure if you remember that, because it's so long ago at this point. But so the idea that Governor Ducey did move to take action on this, but teachers, general employees of public schools are not satisfied, and a lot of people say they shouldn't be, there's a lot more funding to be had there. How does 2019 look to you, whether through the legislative session or in a broader sense for education funding in Arizona?
Well, first, I think the Red for Ed movement showed, you know, at a broader scale, when you're organized and you have a cause and a message worth believing in, who would have thought that there'd be a teacher strike in Arizona and it'd last that long and then the governor would change his position on the teacher pay raise? But with that said, I do think there's going to be the continual push for more ed funding. I believe we're still, you know, $1 billion less than we were in 2008 when the recession started. And there's other, you know, K-12 super important, but there's pre-K, and then there's a stat I saw from ABOR, Arizona Board of Regents, only 20% of Arizona students get a 2 or 4 year degree after 6 years. That is pathetic, and that's not good for the future of our state. So there may be a push for a sustainable funding source, you know, for the P-20 continuum from pre-K to graduate school. So I don't think this movement is going away. Now, there's a nice surplus that Governor Ducey will probably dedicate some more dollars to this. But, you know, this piecemeal approach has got us in trouble in the past, and I don't know if there'll be a push for a more sustainable funding source.
Oh, Chip, when you talk about a push for more education funding, I mean, I feel like this has been going on since when you and I were covering the Capitol years and years ago. Do you think that based on what we saw this past year with Red for Ed, Governor Ducey coming up with his plan to give teachers a pay raise over a few years, does that maybe become more realistic that some of those other needs, things like textbooks and computers and buses and things like that, things that advocates have been pushing for years now, does that become more feasible in 2019, do you think?
I do, because I see, you know, this purple tinge of Arizona we saw during this recent election. And when you look at area suburbs of Chandler and Ahwatukee, which really flipped from, you know, solid red to either, you know, pragmatic Ds, or you saw that shift. And that will probably continue more in Scottsdale, Catalina foothills of Tucson. So that this purple tinge that's going across the state in these affluent suburbs, I do think that will cause the push for more ed funding or reform. This issue is just not going away.
Yeah, and I think what will be interesting to see, too, is the key to Red for Ed was just the organization. It was an unparalleled, very impressive organization, and that's, I think, a huge reason that Kyrsten Sinema won. People were mobilized. They were talking with each other. Neighbors were talking to neighbors about these issues. They said, wow, that we can really make an impact. And I think going forward, that's going to be just absolutely key for them is just being organized, because the Republicans have been organized for a very long time in this state. And now the pendulum swinging back to, I think our natural state is rather purple, you know, kind of a mix of pragmatic Republicans and Democrats. And if Red for Ed's organizers can keep sustaining those messages all the way down ballot for state house, for mayors, for everything, they could have a huge impact for years to come.
The other difference at the Capitol this year is the state house is only 31-29. And I don't think Democrats have had the number 29 since 1966. So that means Republicans can only lose, you know, they have to get all the Republicans' line. So that will be the push for education funding even more possible.
John, I want to ask you about what you talked about with organizing. And two of the organizing efforts that have been really talked about over the last couple of years have both been around education in terms of Red for Ed and the Save Our Schools Arizona. Are there other sort of issue areas where you think folks could potentially have the same kind of success? Or is education just so unique because it really affects everybody at some point in their lives that that is really one that is more maybe better suited to this kind of organization?
Yeah, I think in this state, the big issues would be immigration and education. Immigration kind of had its moment and did not go terribly well for many people about a decade ago now, come to think of it. It doesn't seem that long ago. But education is another one. It just affects everyone. And it's someone that everybody can relate to. If you don't have kids, if you're 20, if you're 10 years old, if you're 90, you get education. You understand the need for it. And also you had a lot of business leaders who might tend towards the GOP who said, hey, it's hard for me to get workers out here because, you know, they want good schools for their kids. So I think it's something that can unite a lot of people once they get into, hey, let's dramatically increase our taxes. Then people are like, oh, no, we like you marching and yelling against politicians. But, you know, my wallet, that's kind of a sacred place. So how you can make that jump to sustainable funding, it's going to take a lot of hard work.
And, John, briefly, there's a lot of reporting in the Arizona Republic in particular about the charter schools, some bad actors in the charter schools. What do you see as far as 2019 goes? Because Arizona is definitely a pro-school choice state, no question. But is there going to be more regulation? Does there have to be?
I think there should be. You need to get these bad actors out. Full disclosure, both my daughters go to charter schools, and they're fantastic organizations. And so nothing makes me more angry than to see people taking these huge cash grabs, basically, when they're supposed to be using these funds to educate children. These children need help, and we really need to keep on, especially charter schools operating in like online learning and so forth, in lower-income areas. It's just like these communities don't have as much of a voice, and the state needs to step in and completely be brutal with these people who would, frankly, abuse these children.
I think, you know, I'm not going to say bad actors, and there may be some. I think what you can fix at the Capitol is there's this baked-in lack of oversight. You know, there's a lack of transparency that was put there by lawmakers. You know, a lot of what, you know, even state lawmaker Eddie Farnsworth, what he did, whether you like it or not, was legal. And a lot of these things were legal. I think there will be a strong push, especially from House Democrats and others, for some kind of basic reform where let's have oversight, let's have transparency, do what the traditional public schools do. And I think that would be a nice playing field for everyone.
And Chip, briefly, just for both of you.
Sure.
Are taxes going to go up in Arizona, or at least a strong proposal to raise taxes in 2019 to increase education funding?
I believe there will be talk about it. I will see if it gets it. Now, I think a lot of it will depend on Governor Ducey's budget, how he structures what he's going to allocate for dollars for education across the spectrum, not just for K-12.
John?
I don't see him moving on a state tax no matter what. You could see a sales tax type situation or, you know, some kind of fee or something taxed by a different name. You could have that, at least in a small measure. I don't think it'll make up the funding gap for the long term.
Would you, if that happens, would that have to be a citizen initiative as opposed to the legislature referring something to the ballot, do you think?
I think it most likely will be a citizen initiative. That's how a lot of huge changes happen in the state, and you can have a lot of prominent politicians support that, but I don't think anyone anyone, even most Democrats, don't want to be on the record supporting a tax increase when they have an election. They're looking at an election a year and a half.
Well, so, Chip, you mentioned that there is some extra money. I mean, some folks would sort of recoil from hearing the word surplus. But do you anticipate, I mean, the governor has promised teachers are going to get another raise. He's promised $30 million, I think was the figure, for to get the drought contingency plan going. I mean, this money's got to come from somewhere, right? I mean, do you anticipate that there is going to be enough money for all the things that the legislature and governor want to and in some cases have to do?
Well, there's never enough money for all the needs. But there's different pots of money. You know, there's been talk about Indian gaming, some reforming that to get a pot of money out of that. There's, I don't know if they'll probably won't touch the rainy day fund. But as every session goes, there'll be a battle over priorities. But I think education will be front and center, and now water, you know, the drought contingency plan has to be. And I hope that's another issue where Arizonans can come together left, right, and center to come up with a long-term game plan for our state.
You know, we didn't necessarily learn a lot from the legislature in 2018 that will carry into 2019, but one thing is there were a couple of occasions, and there was a recent one with Representative Cook as well, some situations of bad behavior. Of course, the biggest one was Don Shooter, who got expelled. John, do you think there's going to be a sort of lingering stench or something related to Don Shooter? Do you think it'll lead to real reforms? We're going to see J.D. Mesnard, who was Speaker of the House, who had a lot to do with that, is now in the Senate. How do you think is that going to be, to some extent, forgotten? Or are we going to see people say, listen, we need to behave better down here?
I think we all hope that they behave better down there, but I think mostly they just want to brush it under the rug and keep it off the front pages, unfortunately. I think it will help just with transparency. Any younger politician wanting to make a name for him or herself would be very wise to be pushing these transparency issues because it's someone, again, it's this bipartisan pragmatic issue. You don't want to see people that you're electing abusing that public trust. It's very crucial. I think the whole Me Too movement, I think, has definitely changed the culture at the Capitol and in the culture in general. And hopefully this old boys network has got the message loud and clear that it'll be disaster. If nothing else, it'll be disastrous for their personal lives if they continue to oppress people.
The other difference is just the societal change, and with more women getting elected to the state house, to Senate, Congress, I think these changes will just happen organically, and they'll be a lot different a decade from now than they were now. And what when I was covering the Capitol back in the 1800s was acceptable is not now. I mean, we saw a lot of stuff with just bad stuff going on with how powerful men treated women that was just unacceptable, and that's not going to be tolerated because women lawmakers and others, women staffers, will say, you're not going to do that.
Do you think there could be a push this coming year to tighten the rules or do away with legislative immunity? That was obviously an issue with a couple of lawmakers, we heard Paul Mosley, and recently with some potential trying to use it. There's some dispute about that with Representative Cook.
Well, one thing I learned about the state capitol with lawmakers is their number one goal is self-preservation. So they probably won't work that hard to get rid of legislative immunity, although I'd love to see it gone because it was from a bygone era of when you had to be on your farm at one time and then had to speed to the Capitol for a big vote. So it's really not needed anymore, but I don't see a lot of big movement. I don't think that'll be atop the priority of most lawmakers.
And John, what about David Stringer? So this is someone who I know they, in essence, voters put him in, and I know the governor doesn't want to do anything. Other legislators don't want to do anything either. But how does that reflect on the body as a whole?
Oh, absolutely horribly. He will be a continuing – it'll be an open wound, especially for the GOP in the state. They're trying to – and Governor Ducey has worked hard to change this image from the old Arpaio and then Brewer kind of days – and just saying, no, we welcome business, we're professional, we're modern, we're of the time. And someone like Stringer just drags you back to this kind of uglier chapter. And I don't know. I don't think that he's going to be politically effective on any level. But the fact that the voters put him back in is pretty bad news for the GOP.
As generic a question as possible in our last minute, Chip, how good or interesting a year is 2019 going to be in Arizona?
I think it'll be fascinating with people jockeying for the U.S. Senate on the Democrat side and the Republican side, what happens with education reform, with water. And then there's always two or three unknowns. We were sitting here last year. Red for Ed didn't exist. We didn't know what was going to happen in the Senate race. So those unknowns are always the most fun things for you guys to cover, I'm sure.
John, what about 2019? Because there's even specter of a recession. We know how that treated Arizona a decade ago.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to be a dramatic concern. And I think everybody at the Capitol needs to be concerned about not over-promising and overspending with the surplus we have. As we know, those surpluses can disappear mighty quick, just spending on different things. I think 2019 will be fascinating. And yeah, just the unexpected is what you're always looking for. And once again, just these new issues will pop up and we'll be sitting here a year from today saying, wow, who saw that coming?
Yeah. And we'll have new mayors in the two largest cities of Tucson and Phoenix. So that's something to look for.
All this time we didn't even mention either of those races. And that just tells you what kind of year 2018 yeah. was.
Chip Scutari of Scutari and Sizzlick, John Gabriel, editor of Ricochet.com. Guys, thanks. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.